George's Secret Key to the Universe by Lucy and Stephen Hawking. Chapter 7. The way home from school was long and hot. The unexpected heat of the early autumn sun was beating down on the tarmac, turning it soft and squashy under George's feet. He trudged along the pavement while big cars whizzed past him, leaving smelly fumes behind them as they went. On the back of some of these enormous, shiny monsters sat the smug kids from school, watching DVDs on the back seat as their parents drove them home. Some of them pulling faces at George as they drove past, jeering at him for having to walk. Others waved happily, as though he would somehow be pleased to see them as they shot off in the distance in their vast gas guzzlers. No one ever stopped and offered him a lift. But today he didn't mind. He had plenty to think about on his walk home, and he felt glad to be alone. His mind was full of clouds in space, huge explosions, and the millions of years it took to make a star. These thoughts took him far, far across the universe, so far, in fact, that he completely forgot an important fact about his life on planet Earth.
"Oi!"
he heard a shout behind him, and it snapped him back to the here and now. He hoped it was just someone shouting in the street, a random noise that had nothing to do with him. He hurried along a little faster, clutching his school bag snugly to his chest.
"Oi!"
he heard it again, this time a little closer. Resisting the urge to look back, he sped up his pace. On one side of him was the busy main road, on the other the city park, which offered nowhere to hide. The trees were too thin and straggly to stand behind, and going anywhere near the bushes was a bad idea. The last thing he wanted was to get dragged into them by the boys he feared were behind him. He kept going, getting faster every minute, his heartbeat thumping in his chest like a bongo drum.
"Georgie boy!"
he heard the yell, and his blood curdled. All his worst fears were confirmed. Usually, when the end of school bell went, George shot out of the gates and was well on his way home while the large, slower boys were still flicking rubber bands at each other in the cloakroom. He'd heard the awful stories of what Ringo and his followers did to the kids they caught on the street. Eyebrows shaved off, hung upside down, covered in mud, left up a tree wearing only pants, painted in indelible ink or abandoned to take the blame for broken windows, all were whispered tales at school of Ringo's reign of terror. But on that sunny, drowsy autumn afternoon, George had made a terrible mistake. He was walking home too slowly just when he'd given Ringo and his friends a reason to come looking for him. Angry with him for landing them with extra work in Creeper's class, they were now clearly on his tail and ready to take revenge. Georgie looked around. Ahead of him he saw a group of mothers pushing prams towards a crossing, where a lollipop lady stopped the traffic to let people cross. Scurrying forward, he joined the mums and babies, managing to insert himself in their midst, so that he was surrounded by pushchairs. Ambling across the road while the lollipop lady held up her bright yellow sign, Georgie tried to look as though he belonged to one of the mother and baby groups. But he knew he wasn't fooling anyone. As he passed the lollipop lady, she winked at him and said under her breath, "Don't worry, ducks, I'll hold 'em back for you for a minute. But you run along home now. Don't let those nasty boys catch you." When George reached the other side of the road, to his surprise, the lollipop lady leaned her sign against a tree and stood there, glaring back at Ringo and his mates. The roar of the traffic started up again, and as George sped away, he heard another menacing shout.
"Hey, we got to get across. We need to get home and do our schoolwork. If you don't let us cross, I'll tell my mother and she'll come and sort you out. She'll give you a lollipop, she will."
"You watch yourself, Richard Bright," grumbled the lollipop lady, walking slowly out into the road with her circular sign.
George turned off the main road, but the sound of heavy thudding feet behind him told him they knew which way he'd gone. He was hurrying down a long tree-lined alley which ran behind the gardens of some very big houses. For once it was empty of adults who might have saved him. George tried a few of the doors in the fences, but they were all firmly locked. He looked around in a panic and then had a flash of inspiration. Grabbing onto the lowest bough of an overhanging apple tree, he hoisted himself up high enough to gain a foothold on the top of the fence and leapt right over it. He landed in a large prickly bush which scratched him, ripping his school uniform. As he lay groaning silently in the shrubbery, he heard Ringo and his mates pass by on the other side of the fence, making spine-chilling comments about what they'd do to George when they got their hands on him. George stayed still until he was sure they'd gone. Wriggling free of his school jumper, which was hopelessly tangled in the spiky brush, he struggled out of the clinging branches. His trouser pockets had emptied their contents onto the ground. He'd scrambled around trying to collect up all his important bits and pieces. Then he emerged from the undergrowth onto a long, flat green lawn where a very surprised lady lay in a deck chair sunbathing. She lifted up her dark glasses and looked at him. "Bonjour," she said in a nice voice. She pointed towards the house. "Go that way. The gate is not locked." "Oh, merci," said George, remembering his one word of French. "And, sorry," he added as he rushed past her and ran along the passage by the side of the fair house. He went through the gate, came out onto the road and set off for home, limping a little because he twisted his left foot. But the streets were quiet and sleepy as he hobbled along, but the silence didn't last long. "There he is!" a great cry went up. "Georgie boy," he heard, "we're coming to get you!" George gathered the last of his strength and tried to get his legs to move fast, but he felt as though he was wading through quicksand. He wasn't far from home. He could see the end of his road, but Ringo and his gang were gaining on him. He ploughed bravely forward, reaching the corner just as he thought he might collapse on the pavement. "We're gonna kill you!" Ringo shouted from behind him. Staggering, George tottered down his street. His breathing had gone all funny. The air was going in and out of his lungs in great swishing gasps. All the scratches and bruises and bumps he'd got running away from Ringo were hurting. His throat was parched and he was exhausted. He couldn't have gone much further, but he didn't need to. He was home. He reached the green front door without being turned into mincemeat, or something worse, by Ringo and his terrible friends, and now everything was going to be all right. All he had to do was reach into his pocket and find his key to unlock the front door. But it wasn't there. He turned out his pockets and found all his treasures, his conger, a foreign coin, a length of string, a blob of blue tack, a model red sports car, and a ball of fluff. But no key. He must have dropped it in the bushes when he climbed over the fence. He rang the bell, hoping his mum might have come home early. Ting-a-ling-ling-ling. He tried again, but there was still no answer. Seeing him standing there, Ringo realised he'd won. He plastered a hideous smile on his face and started to saunter confidently towards George. Behind him, eager for trouble, came his three weasel-faced, hard-knuckled friends. George knew there was nowhere left to run. He closed his eyes and stood with his back to his front door, his stomach churning as he prepared to meet his fate. He tried to think of something to say which might make Ringo back off, but he couldn't come up with anything clever, and there wasn't much point in telling Ringo he was going to get into trouble. Ringo knew that already, and it had never stopped him before. The footsteps stopped, and George opened one eye to see what was happening. Ringo and his friends had paused halfway down the path, and were having some kind of conference about what to do with George. "No!" Ringo was saying loudly. "That's rubbish. Let's squeeze him against the wall until he begs us to let him go." But just as Ringo spoke, something happened. Something so peculiar that afterwards Ringo and his friends weren't sure if they'd dreamed it. The door of the house next to George's flew open, and out of it bounded what looked like a tiny astronaut. Everyone took a step back in astonishment as the small figure in a white spacesuit with a round glass helmet and antenna attached to the back, jumped into the middle of the road, striking a fierce, karate-style pose. "Get back," said the spacesuit in a strange metallic voice, "or I will put the curse of alien life on you. You will turn green and your brains will bubble and leak out of your ears and down your nose. Your bones will turn to rubber and you will grow hundreds of warts all over your body. You will only be able to eat spinach and broccoli, and you will never, ever be able to watch television again, as it will make your eyes fall out of your head. So there." The astronaut did a few twirls and kicks which looked somehow familiar to George. Ringo and his friends had turned a ghostly colour and were stumbling backwards, their mouths hanging open. They were absolutely terrified. "Get into the house," said the spacesuit to George. George slipped into next door's house. He wasn't scared of the little astronaut. It caught a gleam of bright blonde hair through the glass of the helmet. It looked like Annie had saved him.